Good afternoon. Welcome to the Regardless of Age workshop of WCNA 31. My name is Natalie and I'm an addict. Okay. Right. Firstly, can we please open this moment with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer for the addict that still suffers. Moment of silence for the addict that still suffers. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. Firstly, I would actually like to ask a friend of mine, Jono, to come up here and read. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program?
My name's John and I'm an addict. And this is the Narcotics Anonymous program. And I'm from San Diego, California. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a non-profit fellowship or society of men and women whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees, dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Thanks, Dave.
Secondly, I'd like to invite another friend of mine. Just thought you might want to hear a true Australian accent. This man also turns 20 tomorrow. That's 20 in Australia, and that's 20 today in Hawaii. Anyway, he's a good friend of mine. His name's Tim. Would you like to read this? True Australian accent.
Hey, my name's Tim, I'm an addict.
Hi, Tim.
I've got my glasses. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realised that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help through each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realised we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there was no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. I would now like to introduce our first speaker. His name is Dave G, and he's from Hawaii.
I'm a recovering addict. My name is Dave. And hopefully we can get this microphone thing going here. All right. I am so grateful for the opportunity to share at this convention. I've been walking around here the last couple days, and I am just at such a loss with, who to talk to. So I just talk to the people I know, you know, even though there's thousands of people around me from all over the world, and I'm just like, well, just talk to people that I already know, you know, and I was really thinking about this whole opportunity to share here today, and I just realized this is like a real gift for me, because I'll at least be able to, you know, put myself out there with the group of people that have come to this workshop, and hopefully whatever, some of you guys can come up to me or whatever at some point or whatever, and we can talk, you know, and get past that thing in my head that really just separates me from you guys, you know. I'm here, I guess, to talk. I mean, I've thought about this since the day that they called me and asked me to share, like, a couple months ago. Just every time, like, just, you know, just the moment and the people, I'm like, yeah, hello, you know, and... You know, I'm actually like, this is really not a bad crowd. I was like, oh, this is nothing, you know, but I've just prayed and prayed and prayed, man, that my heart can come through here. This microphone is really just not my height, and it's not staying. Can I take it out and walk around?
Park.
Okay. Yeah, this might work a little better. So I'm from Hawaii, and I got clean here in Hawaii. I moved here actually when I was 9 years old. Most people, even there's a young woman in the audience who once, when she first moved here and she met me, she goes, "Wow, you've been here for like, I guess, you know, I was like 20 at the time." She's like, "You've been here for like 12 years, and you're still that white, you know?" And I was actually horribly offended at the time. I grew up very sensitive about the skin color thing out here because hassled about it a lot as a kid, and my friend was like, "Dear Dave, don't worry, it's just checking you out, man, it's cool," and I was like, you know, but I kept thinking like, oh, everybody's going to be disappointed, I'm just some like white guy, you know, and talking, but anyway, so I got clean, and I got clean when I was 19, and I know it's not like the youngest, but in Narcotics Anonymous out here, when I got clean, there was really only one other young guy, and he was from New Jersey, and he had got clean when he was about 17. And we were pretty much it. Like, we went to NA, and there was actually, you know, there was a lot of other people going to 12-step fellowships at the time, but a lot of them chose to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I pretty much just, you know, decided that NA kind of spoke to me, you know, it talked to my heart and stuff, and, you know, I will tell you guys this story. When I was 18 was when I first began to think, well, maybe I have a problem with drugs, you know, and so I had a therapist at the time, and I was kind of like, all right, you know, when I sat down with him, oh, dude, hang on. I'm sorry. I had to set my timer here so I don't blow out the time thing. I was 18, I started seeing this therapist, I'm just like, dude, I think I got a problem with drugs. He's like, well, why don't you try and get clean? You know, so I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. So I went, I got stoned that night, and I was like, I'm going to get clean from here on, you know, I'm going to be clean. And he was, he turned out he had like 12 years or something in recovery, and so I'd go and talk to him once a week, and he pretty much, like, 12-steps me, you know, like, we would sit down, and we'd do, like, some vision stuff, like, you know, what do you see blocking your life, and this and that, but he would talk to me a lot about, like, addiction recovery, and, like, the grief process, and stuff like that we go through when we get clean. But so he was like, dude, you know, go to these meetings. He gave me some people, some phone numbers. I went to a meeting, and it's really like my whole life's been really cosmic in some ways, just like the coincidences. Like the man who is my sponsor today, I used to use with his son, and the guy who was my sponsor for like 5 years, I used to go to the house where he lived when I was loaded because I was using with the other guy's son. And so it's just always been, you know, my life just kind of, the same people have kind of always been floating around it. And so I walked past this, there was two meetings, there was a meeting of NA and a meeting of AA, and I was with a couple other people. And I walked past the NA meeting, and I see the man who's my sponsor today in there. And I go, not going in there, because I don't want to see him, and I don't want to deal with this, you know. So we went to the other meeting, and we sat there, and I identified or whatever, just, you know, because I had a few days or something, and I didn't really end up ever going to a meeting again after that, because I kind of was just like, screw meetings. And the guy that talked at that meeting was, like, just getting on meds, and he was really depressed, and I was like, dude, I'm 18, you know, let's have fun, you know, I'm too young to do this, but I stayed clean like 40 days or something, when I got loaded again, it was not fun anymore, and it was really apparent to me that I wasn't getting loaded for the fun of it anymore, that I couldn't stay clean, and just really a lot of stuff actually came up at that moment. When I got loaded, I didn't get clean again, though, for about another year and a half. And so I spent like a year and a half trying to manage my addiction, you know, and nothing ever worked. I progressively got more and more introverted and was just totally unable to connect with people, you know. And that's really, I mean, when I think about just some of the misery of my active addiction, and just some of the misery of addiction in general, it's just, I used to just be so concerned with what you thought about what I was going to say that I couldn't say anything, you know, and especially, and then, you know, I mean, to add on to that, you know, I mean, I was constantly, like, judging people. Are you better than me? Are you worse than me? If I felt like I was better than you, then, you know, I mean, of course I could talk, and I'd be all, you know, hey, I've got a personality, you know, but I didn't actually put myself there very often, and I met a lot of people that I really thought were, you know, a lot better than me, and so it really just, you know, like the separation between myself and other people, and the separation between myself and myself was just massive during my last year of using, and it was miserable, because I really, there's a huge part of me that really loves people, I love to connect with people, you know, and to not be able to do that at all was just miserable, you know. And I mean, I had all the usual stuff, you know. I mean, I was using, so of course, you know. I mean, you know, whatever, the usual stuff that comes with that. But so anyway, so I got clean on the 19th, came back. I was like, all right, I'm going to NA, you know, and I'm going to do this NA thing. And you know, to be honest with you guys, like, you know, I was, if you want to, like, classify the drugs I used or whatever, I was like a pothead, you know. I used a lot of other stuff, but essentially I always went back to smoking pot, you know. When I go to NA meetings, though, there wasn't, I don't know, it just didn't matter, you know. It didn't matter that I used different drugs than people, because when people would talk in NA, it would seem like they knew what was going on inside me. It actually, when I first went to a couple of meetings, I thought some guy knew what I was thinking about and was talking about it in order to get me to talk about it, you know. And that kind of, you know, I was like, this freaking bastard, man, you know. And really hated that guy for a very short period of time. Then he turned out to be a pretty good friend of mine. Yeah, you know, it was a miserable trip in some ways. And at the same time, you know, coming to NA was just such a relief for me. And so, you know, this whole getting clean at a fairly young age, you know, like, I don't know, man, you know, all I can say is that I learned a lot of things about how to stick around here, how to identify, regardless of the differences that I see, you know, and one thing I'll say, and this has worked for me a billion times, is sometimes when I can't relate to everybody, when I can't sit down and go, ah, yeah, that's hearts. You know, I just remember that people can relate to me, you know, and I know that because people come up to me, they hug me, and they tell me, you know, they tell me that, hey, I can relate, you know, and I hang on to that sometimes, you know, I really do, you know, to help me feel like I belong here, you know, and I mean, I don't really, it's not all the time anymore, but for a while, that was really like a big thing, you know. Like, I didn't have a lot of the long time of using or a lot of the horror and stuff. I had all the horror inside me, you know, and in some ways, actually, being clean 8.5 years now, sometimes now I think I'm crazier than some of the people that I meet, because I'm like, wow, dude, recovery, dude, I'm like, you don't think like that. You're not quite, you know, I am Captain Obsession. You know, my mind locks on to stuff, and we're on, you know, it's pretty crazy, you know, like, I mean, I was thinking today, I went and I bought this watch, because I was like, I need a watch so I can time myself, you know, also, too, because I have, like, horrible anxiety, so, like, you know, knowing the time is just such a relief, you know, it's like, oh, I actually have half an hour, you know, so, like, you know, the last time that I went to buy a watch, man, I bought 3, and I didn't really wear any of them, you know. I mean, that's just, you know, that's a little smattering of, like, what happens when I tap into something now. You know, I really identify with the concept of a disease of addiction, you know, because... You know, when I got clean, and my whole experience, like when I look back my whole life, like I've had obsessive compulsive behaviors that led to spiritual, emotional, psychological decay pretty much all my life, you know, and I've had lots of different, you know, things that I've locked onto, and gratefully I can say actually in recovery that I've also been able to do some of the other work there, you know what I mean, and not just... Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, to me, it was just like, if I just stopped using drugs, I was going to be miserable, you know? Like, I needed the steps, and I needed loads of help, you know? Because I got a mind that just attacks me, you know? This just tells me I'm worthless, I'm, you know, hopeless, I'm more, you know, just the whole, all the shame that comes with this disease that, at least, that I believe I have, and that I believe I hear other people have, you know? You know, yeah, man, I mean, it's just like, I need this program, and, you know, it's just been, not to kind of, just dawn on me, I'm like, okay, the age thing, you know, I don't even know, you know, I don't even know what to say, actually, other than, like, there's a principle in Narcotics Anonymous called anonymity, you know what I mean, and it's about facelessness in the meetings, you know, and it's about we are not our jobs, we are not anything that we are out of the meeting, you know, and it's like, I wasn't some 19-year-old kid in a lot of the meetings. You know, I was just an addict sitting there. And, you know, it's like, I honestly can say I believe so much in what is not said in these meetings. You know, when I sit in the meetings, and, I mean, it's like, you know, if I really think about everything that was said, I could be like, wow, that sucked. You know? But I connect, you know what I mean? And it touches my heart, and I feel connected to people, and I feel like I almost always feel a sense of hope when I walk out of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, you know, you know, it's just been such a gift, man. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be able to, like, be clean and to be able to do this thing, you know, and the more I've learned about addiction, the more, like, I believe that, you know, it's like, getting clean, you know, it's just the beginning of, like, really dealing with this disease, you know, and it's just like, to me, I need all the time I can get. I'm like, thank God I got clean when I was 19, dude. I'm going to need years, you know, for decades, you know, to really, you know, not to say that I've gotten some wonderful freedom in Narcotics Anonymous through working these steps, you know, it's been a real gift, you know, but, you know, whatever, man, you know, it's also just been a real challenge, you know, you know, I've actually probably only got about 5 minutes here. Damn, I got 10 minutes? You did me? Oh, wow, thanks. So, there was one person I wanted, there was one thing I was going to talk about. I actually brought a letter, but I won't read it. I'm just going to talk about it a little bit. You know, like when I got clean, there was a guy, the other guy that came to Dine. His name, obviously, you know, his first name, his name was Jesse. He was from New Jersey. And I picked up his accent, if you can't tell, a little bit. You know, I was such a powerful mimic when I got clean. You know, I still am a powerful mimic, you know. It's like, I mean, I used to always think when I was using, I was just like, okay, if I could just get the right, like, image going, everybody would think I was okay, you know, and everything would be cool, man. You know, so I always hopped around different, you know, I was like a punk, and then I was like into, you know, hip-hop and breaking, just all this stuff, you know. And then I met Jesse, who was from New Jersey, and he was Mr., you know, he was crazy and all this stuff, and he had this accent, and so I picked it up, kind of, you know, and he never said a damn thing, you know. You know, even that, he was just always, and he just always loved me, man. Anyway, so he was just this really this monumental person in my early recovery. In a lot of ways, you know, in a lot of ways because he showed me, he gave me a sense of hope, you know. He had, like, he was very extroverted, he was very, you know, out there all over the place, and I was like, wow, I know that's inside me, but it's not here now, you know, like, I was so just lost in myself and in the self-centeredness of this thing. I kind of just hung around him and I picked up his stuff, you know. But, part of the reason I want to talk about him is just because Jesse killed himself a few months ago. All these years, actually, the last few years of recovery, you know, I've really struggled with suicide and stuff and I just realized, you know, it's like I get to be up here and I get to carry this message. You know what I mean? And he doesn't. So part of me is doing this for both of us, you know. Because this thing kills us, you know. This thing totally kills us. So. But, yeah. Once I start crying, I'm pretty much done. I can't really keep going, so thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Dave. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Miss Sue H. from Australia.
Hi everyone, my name's Sue, I'm an addict, and when they rang up and asked me and said it was anyone can get clean regardless of age, I just had to laugh, you know, really. I know which end of the spectrum I was at. So I'll just sort of share a bit of my story because, you know, I decided the best way to not freak myself out was just not to worry about it, not to think about it, just come here, share my story. And as a friend of mine and I talked about this morning, be confident that in an hour's time, no one will remember. So, I grew up in a, you know, sort of alcoholic family, and it was a really angry place, and I guess, you know, the way I dealt with it was to try and make myself a small target, and, you know, I was a pretty depressed sort of kid, you know, and then, you know, I hit, you know, alcohol and drugs, and they probably saved my life, you know, really. Then, they nearly killed me later, but they probably saved my life then because, you know, I was heading down a really desperate sort of path, and, well, I still ended up on a desperate path, but at least I was alive, you know, and, you know, I just took to everything like it was my second nature, you know. I started out drinking really heavily. I was a really good drinker, you know, really, and, like, pubs were like my sort of home away from home because my family was so sort of fucked up, You know, like I was just really at home, life of the party, you know, I loved it. I could drive everyone home afterwards, you know, if they gave me the car, you know, like, and, you know, then sort of just each drug came along and I got right into it, and I did a lot of my using in the 70s, and, you know, we were a pretty rebellious sort of crew. And we thought it was the answer, you know. I really believed that. I put a lot of effort into thinking it was the answer. And thinking everything else was just a lot of, you know, I'm really going to try with the profanity thing, but, you know, I am Australian. You know, you know, like, it just sort of, now I've forgotten where I was. You know, each bit sort of filled in a bit of my life for me, you know, and I just thought it was a lot of crap propaganda, you know, marijuana, killer drug, ho ho, said I, you know. And, you know, as each drug came my way, you know, I didn't pause for a second, you know, although, you know, the year before I might have been said, you know, I'll never do that heroin, you know. As soon as it was offered to me, I was there. And I was off and running, you know. And, you know, then I thought I'd really got home. You know, I thought, this is it. And the thing is, it never lasts, you know. That bit of it never lasts. Like, if it was like it was then, now, I'd probably still be doing it. But it doesn't last. You know, and I just sort of ended up, my life just got smaller and smaller and smaller, you know. I was on long-term methadone programs for a couple of centuries, you know, like, it just, you know, it wasn't fun. And you know, at the end, I sort of saw myself as this sort of, like, old soldier type of figure on the battlefield of life, you know, just trying to get through life using as many drugs as I could, you know. And, you know, I saw myself as a heroin addict, but, like, I was any port in a storm sort of addict myself, really. I'd do anything, you know, anything to make me feel different, you know. And I just had to feel different to what I was, you know. I just couldn't stand it. So I got to say, you know, like, the methadone thing was supposed to give me some out. It never did. I never stopped using. I never stopped for anything. And what happened for me, I sort of ended up, I was living in a house, and the only reason I wasn't destitute was, you know, my parents had died and left me this house, and left it so that I couldn't actually sell it till I was 50. Today I'm really grateful about that. At the time, you know, like, no, even at the time I knew that this would be sort of, you know, this would keep me from the gutter, and, you know, it was the only difference because, you know, I don't know about any of you guys, but because I was on methadone so long, I wasn't real clean, you know, because your skin just crawls in the shower, it's just hideous. And, you know, I was wearing a collection of my dead parents' clothing, which, you know, today might look sort of wild and groovy. It just looked like a derelict then, you know. And, and, you know, like, I just sort of thought that was going to be it, you know. And I guess a friend of mine who I'm still really friendly with today and who's still clean today started taking me to meetings. And I didn't go because I wanted to get clean. I went because there was nothing happening in my life. They gave me chocolate biscuits and cups of tea, and they were nice to me, you know, and I just sort of thought, oh, well, this is it, you know. I'm never ever going to be able to get any time cleaner because, you know, I've been taking sleeping pills since I was 12, you know, and I thought, you know, you can't expect me not to sleep for the rest of my life, you know. Oh, yes, they did. Anyway, you know, like I just sort of, you know, I go along and eat the chocolate biscuits and, you know, like now my own home group, I always make sure we have lots of chocolate biscuits because whatever gets you in there, you know, like whatever gets your bum on the seat is okay as far as I'm concerned, you know. And I sort of ended up getting talked into going into a detox unit, you know, and it was coming up to Christmas, and I thought, perfect, you know, like, I don't know about your Christmases, but mine had been really hideous for such a long time. I never managed to get the right amount of dope. If I got it, I used it the night before. The dealer was at his mother's place having Christmas dinner. You know, I'd end up at my parents' place and I'd be pilled out, I'd be drinking, you know. Oh, God, there'd be a family fight, like, you know. And I thought, Christmas in detox, that sounds good. You know. So, you know, I went in there and I didn't actually honestly even think about getting clean, really. I just sort of went along to please people, you know. Oh yeah, righto, if you think, you know, they'll feed me, you know. And, you know, they put me in this part of the detox that was called a goldfish bowl because, that, you know, because of my drug using, they were afraid I'd sort of fit and die if I went outside. So, you know, they kept a really close eye on me, and I was there for a few weeks. And I didn't stay clean from that detox. I heard what I needed to hear, which was that, you know, I had no understanding of addiction, even though I'd used drugs for a really long time. And I definitely didn't get clean in my teens, or my 20s, or my 30s, you know, like. What I heard was, you know, it's a sort of slippery dip of life, you know, you pick up, you know, you start off, you're depressed, you're isolated, that was me, you pick up, wow, party time, and then the drugs stop working and you end up worse than you were in the beginning, and that was so me that something in me sort of died, you know, and just went, oh, God, no, like I'm going to have to sort of, and I wandered off from that detox and I probably would have stayed clean, but I didn't know how, you know, and every time I ended up bumping into somebody, I ended up with a needle in my arm. So I went out again to another detox and, you know, took this enormous leap of faith and went into something called a halfway house. I was always a smart ass and joker, you know, and I'd made lots of jokes about, you know, halfway house. Is that halfway in or halfway out? And, you know, like, just that sort of stuff. And, however, you know, it gave me a safe place to be while I was as mad as a snake and, you know, just go to meetings. And that has been so important for me, you know, like, a lot of my recovery has been about just fronting up and going to meetings, you know, no matter what my head says. And it can say anything, you know, let me tell you, on any given day, it can tell me a whole lot of shit, and I just front up and go to meetings, you know, and try and hang in there, you know, and think to myself that any decision I make, because I do like to clear the decks occasionally, and any decision I make that involves me getting rid of people out of my life that maybe I actually need to think about a bit before I do it, you know. Anyway, like, I got clean, I was no spring chicken, I wasn't very well, you know, and I wasn't very well on any level, let's face it, but, you know, physically, my life's been a bit difficult since I've been clean, you know. I I still, no matter what, wouldn't have swapped it for anything, you know? Like, I wouldn't swap being clean for anything, even though it's had its moments, you know? I've had to go through quite a few things. You know, I've had a few operations. I got medically retired from my job about 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, my sort of thing about, you know, early recovery was like, I just got right into work because I found I could do it, you know. And it made it easy, you know, easy to sort of avoid myself and try and do the other people thing, you know. I'd just sort of work and I'd sort of tell myself, oh, I need to do this, you know. This is, work is good, you know. I've never sort of fronted up and sort of done stuff in any way that was acceptable for my entire life. And, you know, so I just became this sort of machine. And that really sort of didn't do my health any good. And eventually, you know, I got medically retired about 3 or 4 years ago. And since then, it's been a really up and down sort of road, you know. Like, at first that was really difficult. Like, I was really depressed, you know. And I sort of just had to fight my way back from that and sort of, you know, really try and work on the health and do all that sort of stuff, you know. And I'm not a natural at that sort of stuff. I didn't get clean and have a honeymoon, you know. I got clean and had what they used to call it, talk about the economy, the dead cat bounce, you know, like, I was sort of, God. I was stuffed, you know, and, like, I just had to sort of try and gradually put myself back together, and, you know, now I'm, you know, then I'd sort of been medically retired, and, you know, it wasn't something I wanted to do, but it's something I knew I had to do, you know. And so I started trying to build up again after that. And that was sort of difficult. And I just started to, you know, come good, feeling, yes, yes. And, you know, I got really sick again. And ended up going on this sort of course of treatment from the liver, and it's, you know, I'm really glad I did it. It didn't work for me, but I'm really glad I did it because I know I've done everything. I've done it to the best of my ability. I'm not going to be sitting around thinking, gee, I could be, I had a better life if I'd done that. You know, I know what I've got is what I've got to run with, and you know, that's that. And but it was a really, really weird time. It does really weird things to your head, the drugs I was on, and it really affects your relationship to other people. It's sort of like you're talking down a tunnel to them, and if, you know, they're not on your side, they're out of your life, you know, like you just sort of go It was a time in which, I guess, I didn't feel very supported by a lot of the friends I'd made over the years in recovery because they were all too busy, you know. That's just the way it was. But fortunately, I'd hung in, and I've done H&I meetings at a rehab for people on long-term methadone programs, and they take them to meetings and bring them down and get them clean, you know. And, you know, they're my sort of people, you know. I just sort of really love them, you know. And there's one guy there who just told us such a magic story, which is sort of how he, if he ever had to run for a bus or anything, he'd he'd stuff cotton wool in the top of all of his pill bottles so he wouldn't rattle when he ran. I love that sort of story. You know, it's so me. And, you know, and those guys, most of whom had been clean by that stage, came round and sort of helped me do stuff at home. And, you know, just came up to me at meetings and said, how are you, and all that, and sort of didn't sort of try and go, oh, she's off, we better, you know, stay away, you know. And like, I just sort of needed meetings even more at that time, you know. I had to go every day just to change where my head was. You know, it was so, you know, and like really I had to get up and I had to meditate and then I had to go to a meeting just to be able to sort of stay on top of things in any sort of way. Well, I wasn't very much on top of anything. I was lying down an awful lot of the time, but, you know, and during that time, you know, it was the last, till a couple of months ago, the last 12 months for me has just been so much about, you know, death, illness and loss, actually. And, you know, I lost 3 friends in the first 3 months of the year. And it was sort of like I was talking underwater to them, you know, like I... But a quick sip of water, won't cry on stage. Anyway, and my brother, one of my brothers ended up with cancer, and, you know, it was just sort of like, my God, it's raining on me. Anyway, they told me that my treatment hadn't worked, and after 7 months they took me off it. And, you know, I was able then to go with my brother when he was having treatment, and that was actually a terrific thing, you know. Like, we hadn't spent any time together since we were in our teens, and we hadn't been all that friendly then either, because in my family you just had to be a bit careful, you know. Like, anyway, you know, so it was actually really good to spend that time with him. And then I guess I've... since then, it's sort of like waking up from a long sleep and your brain's gone dead and physically you're not that great. And I've just had to really try and sort of bring myself back to life a bit, you know. And I have been doing that. It's also sort of given me a look at a few things that maybe I need to look at in my life, you know. My sort of default position when I'm off the air is sort of like, nobody loves me, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I have to sort of, like, mostly I'm okay, you know, my self-esteem is really built up enough, but I guess it sort of taught me a few things to think, like, not everyone I know can deal with illness, you know. It taught me a few things that I need to sort of look at, and I don't know what the solution is to that, but I know it involves me sort of hanging in and coming to meetings and just trying to stay as open as I can, and doing a lot of that stuff and trying to overcome that part of me, you know. Like, at the end of this treatment, I'd done nothing for 7 months but, you know, watch really bad television and read really crap crime books. And, you know, I've had to, it's taken a while to sort of get out of that route. You know, I just sort of stuck there and needing to do something different but not quite knowing how. And I've had to sort of, you know, let the television thing go. And because there's part of me, you know, like, I don't know, there's part of me. I stayed with my cousin recently, who's quite crippled, you know, and I'm sort of using all the gadgets around her house and really enjoying them, you know. And, you know, like there's part of me that goes, oh, Zimmer frame, you know, like, or, gee, that coffin's looking really comfortable and quiet, you know, like, I've got to sort of, you know, not look at, you know, go beyond that and sort of get into life again. And, you know, I've spent so long now going, oh, God, it's nearly nine. See you later. I've got to be horizontal, you know. And, you know, not going anywhere and wrapping myself up in cotton wool, that I've gone too far, you know. I've been in survival mode for so long that I've sort of been a little bit stuck there. And so that coming here and, you know, connecting with a few people has been really important to me to sort of get beyond that sort of survival mode and start getting a life back again, you know. I met up with a friend here who I met during the World Convention in Sydney, which I'm sure some NA historian will be able to tell me. I think it was about 1991, you know, and 91? And, you know, we've been friends since, and she lives in Hawaii, and we just had a really nice talk this morning. You know, we spent a couple of hours talking, and, you know, we worked out later that she missed 5 calls on her mobile, and, we didn't hear it. We reckon that was sort of God stuff, you know, like we just both needed to talk, and we did for a really long time, and it was just so good. And it gave me the sense of, you know, even though I know there's some stuff I have to work on, that it's okay, there's no panic, you know. Like, I just have to keep on in this sort of direction and it'll be okay, you know. I'll be, it'll be okay. So, I just know that I have trouble with crowds, you see. That's why I'm a bit nervous about world conventions, because, you know, a lot of people sort of, you know, it's just sort of, I'm not good with it. And, but this one has been really quite easy. You know, there's been a way to get around the crowds and just sort of get out and have a bit of a breather when you need to. And with me, it's that question of balance again, working out when it's need and not avoidance, you know. And, you know, I went over to Europe for a family wedding recently, you know, and I was in Stockholm, which is just the most beautiful city. And it was my last night there, and I'm going, I better have an early night and, you know, read a good book. Crime. You know, I suddenly thought, this is my last night in Stockholm. What am I doing? You know, so I rang up another member and went to a meeting and ended up having a really nice night. And really, you know, it didn't sort of doom my following day. You know, I can do a lot more than I think I can at times, you know. And I get into this, I got to look after myself, I got to be careful, and I go there too far, you know. I've got to have a life as well, and, you know, it's that balancing and trying to work out where it is, you know. And let's face it, better be tired for a day or two than, you know, have an incredibly quiet and boring life, you know. And I guess the stuff too now that I'm thinking about a lot, which is, do I really want to do this in my life? You know, like that whole experience on interferon, etc., that took up nearly a year of my life. And I don't regret it, but I think now really carefully about what I get involved in. I want it to be something that really adds to my life. And you know, I want it to be, you know, I don't want to be doing work or other stuff that just doesn't nurture me in any way at all, you know. I want to be getting something out of it. You know, who knows how long you're around, and I want to have as good a life as I can while I'm here, you know. So anyway, that's all for me, and thanks for listening.
Okay, and it brings us nearly to the end, but I'm just going to ask Aloha, would you mind coming up here and reading just for today? Her name is Aloha. She's having a really hard time at this convention. Another friend of mine from Adelaide, Sydney, Adelaide, Australia.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Alara and I'm an addict. Just for today. Aloha. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living, enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Okay, thank you very much for having me in the chair. Can we please make a magic circle around the room and close the meeting with the third step prayer?